From Dog Works Training Centers, professional canine training centers in Denver, Colorado, and Anchorage, Alaska, this is Dog Works Radio, committed to families and their dogs to build lifelong and fulfilling relationships. Visit our website at dogworksradio.com. Dog Works Radio is part of Twine Group Media and syndicated worldwide on blogtalkradio.com. Now, here are your hosts, Robert and Michelle Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto hosting Dog Works Radio from the mushing capital of the world, Willow, Alaska. And on the line, we have our co-host calling in from Denver Dog Works. Michelle, how are you?
I'm doing wonderful. It's a nice day this Sunday, and we will be grilling later on this afternoon. It'll be my last weekend here at my parents' house with our daughter, and it's a little bit melancholy. So
you will be up here in Alaska next weekend. I don't think we're going to have a show next weekend. It is Labor Day weekend, and you're going to be up here getting settled in and getting ready for the next chapter of what's going on here at Dog Works Radio. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm sure everybody is as well. It's been a while since we've co-hosted a show together in the same place. So we're looking forward to that. What is going on at Denver Dog Works, Michelle? I know you have some interesting news to share about our little guy, Nico.
Oh, my goodness. I'm going to wait a little bit to share what's going on with Nico. Kyle, our son, is gearing in and digging in to take over Denver Dog Works, which is a huge undertaking. This is a business that you and I have been developing and building for at least a decade. It's something that you started quite a while ago, and we've turned it into what it is today, a very lucrative, successful mom-and-pop business in the Rocky Mountain region. And we're known nationally now. We have clients calling us from the Outer Banks of North Carolina all the way to Hawaii. So, we get a large client base, and we appreciate that, and we want to say thank you to everyone out there that does listen to the radio show and does support our business and our style of training. That being said, Kyle is looking forward to a few boarding trains that are coming in, as well as rehabilitating a pit bull that we've had for a client for about 2 weeks now. And their dog is just not getting the picture. She came from an abusive home, neglected, and things like that. She is not your typical size pit bull. In fact, she is rather small, but her head is full size. So she's a little odd looking, but we're going to be helping her out. Nico is a German Shepherd puppy that I went and purchased last week. He is the runt of the litter, which, you know, a lot of people will say, what were you doing? Why did you do that to your clients? And, you know, I did it because I've raised runts before, and I have found them to be a little bit more loyal and definitely more driven about the training and what we're asking of him to do. Now, when I brought him home, he weighed 6.2 pounds. And when he had his vet visit yesterday, he weighed 7 pounds. So he's gaining weight just fine. The vet was very happy with him, liked his body proportion, says he will be a full-size German Shepherd, about the 80-pound range, which is about what we were looking for anyhow. But he is doing fabulous. He already is checking the house, and they have a large house. He's checking the house for them. He's barking and growling appropriately at certain noises, wants to know where the kids are at all times, tattles on the kids already, helps them get their clothes off. The other day, their three-year-old son was having trouble taking off his pajama pants, and Nico was right there to help him do that. The client let me know today that Nico got to go swimming, and he will be forwarding me photographs later of that, which is great news because I wanted to make sure he did learn to swim in their swimming pool before he goes up to Alaska, where we do not have a swimming pool, and getting to teach him how to swim will be done in the bathtub. So I wanted to make sure he got to learn how to do that. But he's a fun little guy. I hope you guys follow his story on Forto's Fort blog and on Robert's blog, because we're going to be just kind of doing a story about his whole life. since we did get him at 8 weeks of age, and we will have him for at least probably a year.
So we're looking forward to Nico's progress. He's going to be trained for some executive protection type work for this family in Denver, Colorado area. Today we have a guest calling in from Toronto, Canada. His name is Tom Relic, and he is a dog trainer for the last 30 years. So he's been doing this for a while. I'm sure he's seen a lot of cycles come and go in training, everything from the old school methods to positive reinforcement and clicker trainings to treat training to the big box stores at Petco and PetSmart and things like that, and the new fascination with the TV trainers. They've been on for the last couple of years now, and you know, they have pros and cons. You know, I think that we're really going to get into an interesting discussion with Tom Relic, calling in from Toronto, Canada. Tom, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. How you doing, Robert?
Pretty good, thank you. Introduce yourself. Tell us who you are and what you're about.
Okay, well, my name's Tom Relic, and when I got into the business, I had a small little dog, that my very first dog. It was a Beagle mix. And, you know, I guess you could say, like Cesar Millan says, I was born with certain knowledge, I guess, with dogs, but I certainly don't have the proper knowledge to train them professionally. But the kind of work I did with my dog was pretty good. You know, the dog did a few things and listened well and was off-leash quite well. And some dogs do off-leash better than other dogs just naturally, and this one kind of did that. And I thought, well, this is something I really like. I've always loved animals all my life, and dogs were really my favorite. And then in Sheridan College, when I was doing an animal science course, a professional dog trainer came in and did a demonstration. And I hooked up with him and said, look, I'm really interested in doing this for a living. I don't want to just, you know, read books and figure this stuff out on my own. I need training, and I need to learn how to do it properly. And the only way to do that with dog training, and I think it would be the same with learning how to drive a car, you just can't, you know, learn how to drive a car reading books and looking at videos and not getting behind the wheel and having an instructor teach you how to drive a car. There's a, you know, certain way that your body has to get accustomed to doing it and certain way of doing things. So he had a security business, or actually he was running a security business for a big firm, and all his dogs were on the team, which he had trained, and I became an employee of that security company and worked with him for a while. And in the beginning, we used, you know, I guess you could call them old techniques, where we didn't use any food. We thought that was bribing, or, you know, that the dog wouldn't be trained well somehow or another with using food. And for the first 6 years, I didn't do that. And then I got into sport training, and I found that the people I was meeting and the dog trainers that I were meeting, and these dog trainers, don't forget, not only do they compete against hundreds of trainers in their own country to even, you know, be considered to go overseas and represent their country, but then they're having to train against hundreds of other trainers from 30-plus countries around the world. So if they're not good, I don't know who is, you know. And when I learned with these guys, I learned that their methods are a little different than commercial-type dog training methods. A lot of them were in it for the sport, not so much for the business. All of them use food, especially for tracking. And I found the dogs to be more motivated. And I'd have to admit, after 6 years of training dogs professionally in the beginning, I was impressed with these guys. So I learned more about the Schutzen training type techniques. And yeah, I found that you would learn a lot more about the dog's natural instincts and a lot more about dogs than a lot of commercial trainers did here in Canada that have been training for years and years. So, you know, having said that, when I see people doing proper basic obedience dog training, and I recognize a trainer who's qualified, who's reputable, who's well-known, methods work, and you know, has a good rapport with dogs, I don't mind telling people about that. But when I see people on TV doing these bizarre, crazy things, avoiding doing obedience training, trying to tell people, okay, well, you know, don't worry, it's not a problem that you didn't do anything with your dog for the last 2 years or 3 years, and that you didn't correct the problem, you know, the 20th time it happened, I'm here to fix it because I'm a magician. That's not what I want people to believe. And people really don't want to hear from, you know, dog behavior, especially the celebrity dog behaviorists you see on TV. that it's going to take 2 months to train your dog. They'd rather hear that it can all be done in 1 hour or two or a week. And honestly, that's not the case. And from what I have experienced, and I've only watched a few episodes, and mind you, a few episodes for me was enough, I just looked at this and I thought, well, what was really accomplished here? And when you call the owners a year later, what did they accomplish? I don't think they accomplished much. And this is why I'm trying to make people aware that, you know, watching this show isn't going to help you train your dog. And some of the ideas might work, but even if that one specific problem is better or solved, you still end up with an untrained dog. And some people don't understand what a trained dog is until they own one, or at least join an obedience school like I did when I was a kid. And that kind of made me want to be a dog trainer, kind of gave me the right ways of doing things and showed me the wrong things I was doing. And the wrong things that people do are very similar. In fact, everybody pretty sure have made the same mistakes, you know, like doing the wrong things. Dog jumps up, we pet them. 6 months later, we're told to knee them in the chest and stand on their feet. And, you know, it's we create the problems, but we didn't mean to. You know, people think different and the dog thinks different. And this is what people really need to learn. But they also need to know that you're not going to watch redundant training, repetitive training on TV. It can't work. But that's what has to be done. The dog has to be brainwashed. The dog has to be 100% trained to stay 100% trained for the rest of his life, and not just 10% trained or 20% trained, because he'll stay 10 or 20% trained.
Let me interrupt you just for a second there, Tom. We're talking to Tom Relic. He is a dog trainer from Toronto, Canada. Tom, first off, what is the name of your training school?
It's called the Academy for Dogs International, and I just want to point out that the word international, I use that because I also had a school in Florida, and that school was in operation for a good 12 years, but okay. I'm no longer in Florida, and I'm just kind of focusing here in Toronto at the moment. So it's Academy for Dogs International.
So Tom Relic with Academy Dogs Academy for Dogs International, and today we're talking about the pros and cons of TV trainers. And Tom talked a lot about you know, the processes of getting there in his introduction there. But to just start this off, Tom, and Michelle will jump in when she has questions. It's a little difficult when we have three phone calls over probably about a 4,000-mile area. So we'll do our best here. You made a good point there, Tom, when you said that a person can't learn to drive just by reading books or watching videos. And I think that's a great point to really hit home, especially when you're talking about dog training. And a lot of people, you know, obviously just by the number of episodes that are on TV and the ratings that they get, are watching those shows on cable television, whether it be Animal Planet or National Geographic or even on satellite, on DirecTV. There is a, you know, it's kind of like a pay-per-view channel, but they have on throughout the day dog training tips, and they have this guy on that, you know, is kind of running through how to teach your dog sit and stay and that sort of thing, not doing behavior problems, but more, you know, just trying to teach regular pet owners, you know, some techniques that they can learn just by watching video. So when guys and gals are watching these shows, I think that they're watching them for not only information, but also they're becoming aware of training techniques. So I think that it's presented in that way, in a positive way. It's getting people aware that that dog training does need to happen. First off, let me get Michelle's response to that. What do you think about the awareness that these shows are building? And then we'll go to Tom. Michelle?
Well, Tom, nice to meet you. I'm Michelle. You know, it's one of those things where I always take a step back and I go, that's great. I'm really glad about these TV shows showing people how to train their dog, except they're going through it step by step with a well-trained dog. Very few times do you see on those shows where a dog is truly being out of control and unruly. And teaching a dog how to do things is the easy part. Teaching the person how to do the maneuvers and how to handle the leash is something completely different. A lot of times my clients will come in and they have watched every single show by the Dog Whisperer out there, and that's great. But they bought a brand new puppy that doesn't have aggression problems, and that's primarily what he exposes on his show, is dogs with aggression problems, dogs with behavior problems. How do you get them not to bark? How do you get them not to bite? Those types of things. Puppies don't behave that way. And if you automatically start doing his snake bites and restrictive leash work and things like that, it sets you up for creating a problem within the puppy that wasn't there in the first place. So, I mean, I would like to know how Tom feels about not even training the dog, but training the client first.
Tom?
Oh, yeah, exactly. I agree with everything Michelle said. I mean, that's pretty much all I've seen with the big major, you know, TV shows with these dog behaviorists, I guess I'll call them. They are kind of trying to teach the owners while they're fixing a dog problem with physical means, but they're not. I mean, I haven't seen proper leash handling skills on those shows. You know, for example, let's say Michelle puts a necktie around Robert's neck. Where would you position your hand on that necktie? Would you position it at the Adam's apple of the husband when you're trying to teach him to remember to put the toilet seat down and give a correction, or would it be at the very bottom of the tie? Remember,
I'm loving that suggestion. I'm really loving that suggestion, Tom.
You know, I mean, if you put your hand right beside a dog's mouth, and that's where humans, that's what they do. They don't know why. Their brain tells them, I have to make this leash short, and I have to hold it with both hands, and your hand ends up being right next to the dog's mouth. That's not proper leash handling skills. If anybody worked for me that did that and didn't want to change, they'd get fired because they'd get bit so often in front of my customers. And as you know, you've seen Caesar get bit several times on TV and his customers. That never happens to me in 30 years, not one customer. So if you do proper leash handling work, you'll get somewhere. If you watch that TV show, you'll get bit just like the lady did that had a dog that didn't know how to heal, and all Caesar told her to do was think about chocolate fudge and walk fast. So you have a dog that's got no healing abilities or no training behind them. She's walking fast, doing what she was told, and got bit right on camera. Absolutely nothing was accomplished. When I go see a customer, I don't, you know, ask them, okay, well, what's the problem, and then watch the problem happen. And instead, I would say, well, you know, how old is the dog? If they tell me he's 2 or 3, and then I would ask, well, how many times has this problem happened? They say, well, every day. Then I'd say, well, what's wrong with you? You know, you should have got your dog trained years ago, but don't worry, it's not too late. We'll get started on it, and it's going to take a couple months. But not, you know, oh, that's okay. So your dog knows how to sit a little bit, and now me, Magic, Mr. Magic, is going to come and fix everything. That's not the image that I think people should get. They should get the image that it involves work. You need a professional, licensed dog trainer, which really I don't know of any country that has regulations right now for licensed dog trainers. So where do people really go? And I don't want to see them go to their television set. That's my point that I'm trying to make. I'm not trying to slander people. I'm just trying to get the truth out.
Go ahead, Michelle.
Let me just say, yesterday – I haven't been doing this for 30 years, just want to put that out there. And yesterday I interviewed a client with a pot cake. And if for those of you not familiar with pot cakes are a mixed breed of dog coming out of Africa and the Turkish Caicos Islands and the Bahamas under an ASPCA type of a shelter hold over there. And they're basically a feral dog that's wild, and they live in a foster home for a little while. They're not receiving proper socialization during their fear periods and so on and so forth. But they came in with this 1.5-year-old female pot cake yesterday, and I'm familiar with that breed. I've just trained another one not 3 weeks ago. And I'm familiar with the fact that they have high defensive drives and high prey drives. And as I'm trying to explain to my clients what those drives are and why they're so important, whether we're talking about behavioral problems or not, if you don't know how to recognize certain drives in your dog, you're going to actually overcorrect or undercorrect or accentuate the problem. And as soon as they started speaking about that, they went into And I'm not bashing Cesar Millan, please understand. I think that he's good for the industry as an entertainer. I don't necessarily agree with a lot of his methods. In fact, most of his methods I do disagree with. And as they're talking about it, I said, well, show me what you do to correct her. And they did the whole, you know, noise and the snake bite and stuff. And I got up and I walked away from this dog on purpose, knowing that she was going to nip me, not bite, but nip me. She nipped me right on my butt cheek. And I knew exactly what she was going to do, and I wanted to show them that they did not have proper control of their dog, nor was their method working. And they thought that it was. They were completely embarrassed, completely appalled. They thought I had been injured, you know, severely. I needed to go to the hospital. I can tell you I don't even have a bruise, but that's not my point. My point is that sometimes you have to show people exactly what they're doing wrong by allowing yourself to get injured or allowing the dog to go so far that they show their true colors in front of their owners, because their owners have blinders on. Robert and I call it kennel blindness, to the point where they think that they have followed A through Z steps on these shows, and then they miss one, and they don't understand why it's not working with their dog until they really do talk to a trained professional, as you've mentioned. I'm not a behaviorist. I will never tell people that I am a behaviorist. Robert is, and I do follow a lot of his methods, and I read his books and, you know, those types of things. And at some point when you've been married long enough, some of it is osmosis and you learn as well. But I will tell you, I am a service dog trainer, and that is my specialty. And I expect dogs to behave certain ways, but I also expect their owners to learn how to initiate respect and manners out of their dog, which I think should be taught first and foremost before even obedience is thought of.
Well, I agree with you. I think you hit on the key here. The key is, the owners have to understand and know dogs. They have to learn about dogs, their personalities, their temperaments, their nature. This is what they need to know. And I think that this needs to happen with those dog trainers out there. And there are some that are in the business, especially pet stores. I mean, I'm the one that opened them all up here in Canada. Now there's people with 3-month courses conducting them. I had nothing to do with that, by the way, but I'm just saying, the dog trainers, they need to know that. And if I'm a dog trainer, I don't need to write on my advertising. Well, I just started to recently, and I don't know why, but I've never done this in 30 years. I don't put dog trainer / behaviorist. If I don't understand dog psychology or dog behavior, I wouldn't be successful. And I wouldn't have been able to train 7,000 dogs and not get bit, especially dogs that were dangerous enough to kill me. So if I don't know what I'm doing, I'm going to get bit on camera. But I just don't understand how somebody can make a handsome living out of it and not have qualifications, credentials, or something on paper that says, yes, I am a dog behaviorist or a dog trainer. You know, and in the old days, here in Canada anyways, they had a government kind of run thing called Canada Manpower. And if you need to know how much a person's wage should be for whatever trade they're involved in, it tells you. And it has dog trainer, $20 an hour, you know, years ago. But there was nothing for a dog psychiatrist or a dog psychologist or even a dog behaviorist. It didn't exist. It was made up in this country. And what's happening is these kind of people don't have the credentials that your husband has. They're learning how to train dogs by trial and error. And I've seen many trainers do this, especially in North America. They learn by trial and error, and they're practicing on other people's dogs. And even if somebody projects confidence, and maybe they're a breeder, or maybe they've trained 2 or 3 dogs, and they know a little bit about it, in one lesson, they can make that dog listen pretty good because they've got the dog's attention when they're projecting that confidence, maybe not undivided attention as, you know, you would with a dog that's already learning how to heel, but the owners are going to be impressed. But then when they mess up, they blame it on the owner or the dog, when really it's their leash handling skills, their lack of knowledge, and here it is right on camera, right before our eyes. People are getting bit on camera. And if I allowed myself to get bit to prove that a dog bites, I'd have scars all over my body. Because trust me, I've had all kinds of sizes and all kinds of dogs that are dangerous, that people don't want to put down. They love them. They want to save them. I do my best, and I don't get bit. But I would, you know, you have to have really good leash handling skills. You really do. Otherwise, it's just not going to work. So, I mean, that's the point, really, that I'm trying to make, Michelle.
So we're talking to Tom Relic, the owner of Academy 4 Dogs International, calling in from Toronto, Canada, and we're talking about the pros and cons of TV trainers, and that kind of carries the gamut of all of them, from the behaviorist to, you know, the guy that has his public access show that is teaching folks how to train their dogs. So I have, my next question is up for discussion here, is what about the entertainment value of the show? You know, that's why they're there. That's how they're making their money. Obviously, they're doing it through advertising and things like that. And if anybody watches any type of reality television, the things that sell are the problems. You know, whether it's the bites or you know, the controversy in you know, a reality show, so to speak. So I think that they show that stuff to enhance the show, to enhance the entertainment value of the show. So if we look at it just as an entertainment valued show, what do you guys think about that, Michelle?
I think it's propaganda. I think that if you, most of the reality shows out there are created to show drama and, you know, people have these super fabulous lives when they really don't. I think that it's, you know, it is entertaining, but if you're watching it to try to learn from it and you don't understand that TV is entertainment, whether it's called a reality show or not, then you're going to bring problems into your relationship with your pets. You know, I have a few clients that have tried some of these methods on their cats, and they've been severely bitten by their cats for behaving this way with them. So I think it's a dangerous situation. I mean, you know, I'm an old lady, okay? I'm almost 40 years old, and the way that we grew up with dog training, you know, dogs weren't in the house when I was a little kid. We had farm dogs. They were taught to do perimeter checks on our 20-acre farm and make sure the coyotes didn't come in and bother the farm animals. Yes, the kids could interact with the dogs, but the dogs weren't laying in front of the fireplace on the floor at night. You know, and at the same time, I had dogs in my own house that lived in with us and dogs that didn't. We didn't do dog training like we do today. I never thought of dog training as a career even as a child. I thought that people just did what they needed to do with their dogs because they used dogs in some way or form as enhancing their lifestyles. You know, it's just recent, in my opinion, that dogs have become turning into people's children and extensions of their families in ways that I don't always agree with. I don't think that dogs belong in strollers. I don't think they need to have clothing on, and I don't think they need manicures and having their nails painted. You know, dogs were brought to us as a way to enhance our lives and make our lives easier and better. So I have some issues with that, but for the most part, I think that the entertainment part of it is more propaganda than anything else. It's enhancing the pet industry as far as getting sales in at those big box stores. And those big commercial companies that promote these shows, that's their entire agenda. The agenda is a commercial.
Tom?
Well, I agree. And you know, I'm trying to think of the word right now. I'm going to have to get on Google to type it in, but it's a word where people humanize their pets, like she was saying with the nail polish and the clothing. That actually can be a problem. So, you know, we want to get people on the right track to really understand how the dog thinks and how the human thinks, because they're clued out and dumbfounded as to both of those. But I think the only entertainment venue where it will actually be beneficial to people, I'm just going to give an example, and I'm talking now, well, 20 years ago, here in Ontario, somewhere close to Niagara Falls. I don't know exactly where, but there was a show. It was called Dealing with Dogs, and basically, it was a group of people with dogs in a training center, and it was aired on TV, and it showed the basic obedience training. And, you know, for most people, you know, you have to admit it,
it's boring. I mean, we try hard as trainers to make this stuff not so boring with the dogs, you know, for one thing, and with the owners. But
it's boring. You're doing repetition.
You get 100% obedience trained. And when I say
100% obedience trained,
when you have a dog that's got dog issues,
dog aggression,
and is going crazy on the leash, that's really
the only way to really solve it.
You tell them the command heel, and in one split second, it stops, and your dog walks by calmly
next to the dog. You don't have any more dog issues. To get to that takes 2 months. So, you know, if you show that, it would work.
But the reason they canceled it is because
again, the training place was pretty good. But, again, it's from North America. We think we know everything about dogs until we visit the Europeans, and then we learn.
And we come back, and we see our mistakes. And the mistake they made was
they showed people what to do when the puppy,
you know, like a two-month-old or two-and-a-half-month-old puppy is chewing on an infant's hand,
you know, like maybe a
one-year-old or a six-month-old
infant.
And the lady slapped the dog across the face.
This is what we teach people not to do. So they decided to can the show. We put in an offer. They contacted me. They showed me the video. We put in a bid, but they decided to cancel. But I think if you have that kind of a format where you have people with their dogs going through the paces, and then at the same time, you know, and you don't have to show the whole half hour or 1 hour class.
You just have to show the highlights of that class.
And then from there, you step into a person's home with a problem dog, and you show them how to use your obedience techniques to correct the problem. But you don't bypass the training. You don't encourage them to say, well, I'll just take a few of these tips and avoid doing basic obedience training,
because people don't want to spend 2 months on the training. They want it to be automatic. They want it to be overnight. And that's the problem.
Let me jump in here just for a second, Tom. When you're talking about the time that it takes, I think that is probably my biggest issue that I have with these TV shows. Is just like anything, you know, you see a show on television and you watch a full season, and all of a sudden you say, I can do that. I mean, a lot of people do that. Think about art. People look at Picasso paintings and they say, wow, how in the world can that sell for millions of dollars? I can draw something just like that. And I think that's one of the main issues with these TV shows is they wrap everything up into an hour, or possibly they have the dreaded to be continued tagline at the bottom of the show. But they do it so that it looks like everything is so easy in such a compacted part of time. And, you know, I haven't done a lot of basic obedience training for the last year since I've been up here in Alaska training sled dogs. But I know just about every day when I would meet a new client when I was down in Denver, they would see something occurring on television on any of these shows, and then they would call us up and they say, hey, my dog has the same problem that I saw on the Dog Whisperer last night. Can you come over and talk about it with me? And I'll come over and, you know, we'll sit down and we'll figure out what the problem is. And, you know, the next thing I say is, okay, this is going to take X number of sessions, and that equals X number of dollars. And almost inevitably, the response I would get is, what? It's going to take X weeks, X months to do this, and it's going to cost how much? And they don't understand that it takes time to do this. Behavior cannot be solved overnight. And the response that I always give to people is, if you are a smoker, do you think you can quit smoking today forever? And especially smokers will answer, absolutely not. It takes an extended period of time to do so. So, Michelle, I know you're in the trenches every day and you're talking to folks about dog training. What do you find out about, this inevitable situation that we have with seeing it on television and done in an hour, and then you tell folks it's going to be X number of sessions?
You know, I think that generally people have the right heart. The heart is in the right place. They want to do something good for the dog. And what I try to do is educate people about the fact that, hey, high five, good job, you rescued a dog. That is really cool. But don't invite that dog into your home and automatically put that dog on a pedestal because it had a bad life. You need to, you know, introduce that dog slowly to the environment of your home. understand that it needs to learn your rules and your boundaries. And the biggest tagline I tell people is, your dog does not pay your bills. And until dogs start to pay our bills, they don't get a free ride. And for the most part, people don't understand that, and so I really do say exactly that. And then most of my male clients go, ha, exactly. We're not putting food on my table, so why am I bending over backwards and grilling chicken for my dog? You know, and I, please understand, I don't want people to be abusive of their animals. I just want them to understand that you'd be surprised how many people say, my dog's the alpha. And I go, hold on, wait a minute. You're the alpha. Why can't you recognize that that's your position? I don't care if you're weak in a group of human beings. You have to be the alpha over your pet, whether it's a dog or a cat or a turtle or an iguana or a fish, for crying out loud. You have to be the alpha. You are the one that provides the food, the love, the care, the comfort, the shelter. That's the alpha's job. And until people understand that, then the whole thing is not going to fall into place.
So let me pin you down on this, Michelle. When people say, I saw it on TV done in an hour, what is your response to that? I know you talk about, being the boss and things like that. How do you, talk to people about it only being, it can't be done in a session or two. It takes time to do.
It depends on the person and their willingness to learn. I mean, sometimes people call us because their neighbor said, you should go talk with someone about dog training, and that's great. But for the most part, I say, let me show you what I can do with your dog in the next 10 minutes, because it's 10 minutes between the show being ran and then the next commercial. And what I do is I work with their dog for 10 minutes, and then we have a commercial break, literally 3 to 5 minutes, and then I say, get up and repeat exactly what I just did with your dog 15 minutes ago. And most people cannot repeat what I just did with their dog 15 minutes ago because they don't remember everything I did in that 10 minutes because too much time has lapsed. And that's what I try to explain to them. I say, you know what, don't worry about the editing that goes on, the behind the scenes that goes on, the fact that Cesar Millan is not a behaviorist, that he has one on his staff that's telling him what to do. Forget all of that stuff. Let's see what you can remember to do with your dog in 10 minutes. And then you're going to take a commercial break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to see if you can do it. No one can do it. No one.
Tom?
Well, I mean, you're correct about that, Michelle, but you're missing a few good points. And I think we're all on the same page here. It's just these kind of conversations are endless. I mean, there's so much involved. But it's not that they don't remember what you just saw in front of you. You know, it's like, okay, somebody sits down in a bar, they have a couple drinks, they see somebody playing the drums, they think, wow, that looks simple. They get up there, they bang the sticks around, they hit the snare with 1 or 2 feet, but something's not right, something's not working. They just saw the guy do it, but, you know, they can't. People can't drive and talk on a cell phone. They can't concentrate. But yet people can sit in their car and they can talk to them for an hour and drive. And they're never going to outlaw that. It's coordination. And it's not what women call multitasking. No, that's different. It's coordination. It's where right hand is doing something, left hand is doing something, right foot is doing something different at the very same time. That's drumming. That's driving and talking on a cell phone. Whatever in life, whatever looks easy, it is never easy. Some people think golf, simple, hit a little ball in the hole. One of the most difficult, I couldn't even get the ball off the ground the first week, never mind hit it in the hole. So, I mean, people think, oh, if it looks easy, it's got to be easy. You know, I can be this guy. And you're exactly right. That's what's happening. So, I think, yeah.
Go ahead, Michelle.
Tom, I think you and I would probably be great friends, but my point was just that. It's like when you are told we used to do these workshops when I was in middle school where the school police officer would come in and he would have two bad guys walk through the room and wouldn't tell us anything about it, and the bad guys would leave, and we would be asked 5 minutes later what each individual was wearing. you know, and what they give a description. It goes to that type of thinking. It's more of a right brain, left brain thing that I'm talking about. That you see it on the TV and you're watching it to learn, but you're actually not watching it to learn, because part of your brain is saying, "Oh, I'm entertaining. I'm relaxing." And that's what I'm trying to say is they can be in the same room with you, you know, watching that guy play the drums and hear the music and know a little bit even about instruments and how they work, and not be able to repeat what he just did because of practice, yes, but also because they weren't concentrating on the task at hand even for 10 minutes, because most people's attention span isn't that long, let alone their dog attention span being that long. That was what the point I was trying to make. So when they're watching these TV shows that run for, you know, an hour, and you've got 15 minutes of commercials, so this is a 45-minute show, chances are you only retain the really highly dramatic event or the high, you know, action event. You didn't retain anything in the middle.
No, you're right about that. Maybe I didn't think, you know, in depth about what you had said, but that I think it's a combination of that, which is obvious, that's part of it, and the fact that you're not born to play drums. It takes conditioning and training, and that's what these owners need. They need conditioning and training, more than 1 hour of what anybody can do in their living room, or 2 hours or three. I mean, certainly the dog, I mean, teaching obedience, I mean, you know that heel means pay 100% attention to me. An hour is even pushing it. I mean, the dogs, you know, and depending on the age of the dog. So when you're, you know, you're trying to show them something with the dog and they're asking you a couple questions and your dog is hearing blah, 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 blah. I mean, you don't have his attention. You don't have his motivation there. So it's a combination of both. And you're absolutely right.
So we're talking to Tom Relic, the owner of Academy for Dogs, Academy for Pets. Is it dogs or pets, Tom?
Dogs.
Dogs. Academy for Dogs International, calling in from Toronto, Canada. He is a dog trainer, has been one for over 30 years, and we're discussing the pros and cons of TV trainers. And we've had a pretty lively discussion about a couple of different areas of the shows, including being entertaining versus the time that it takes to train dogs, as well as concentration and what it takes to just train your average dog to do sit, down, stay, and come. So my next question to both of you guys is, how have these shows helped our industry in terms of introducing people to dog training and or introducing people to careers as dog trainers? You know, I remember in Denver that there's over 230 people listed as dog trainers in an area of about 2 million people. So with that, about probably 750,000 dogs, I would say, are in Denver. And there's only 230 people and or companies to train all of those dogs. So I think the more competition, the merrier in my eyes. I don't mind having somebody being my competition. So I think, at least in my opinion, these shows have increased awareness enough to people that want to do this as a career. And it is a very rewarding and very lucrative career for somebody that wants to take the time and the effort and the all of the hours that goes into a business like this. It's not something where you show up Monday morning with a leash and you're ready to open business. It takes years and years of practice to do this. So my question is, Michelle, how do you think it's helped not only the awareness for pet dog owners, but also people interested in becoming trainers themselves?
Well, we train people to become dog trainers, and we've taken a break from that because, I mean, quite honestly, the interview process is detailed. And one of the first things that I ask someone when they call me and say, "I want to take your dog trainer's course," I ask them specifically, "How much experience do you have with different breeds of dogs? Can you tell me five types of dogs that you've worked with?" And they can't, because they've worked with their own dog, their friend's dog, or whatever, and they can't even list five dog breeds. If you can't list five dog breeds, you have no idea what you're getting into. People don't all own Labrador Retrievers. People don't all own, you know, the little foo-foo dogs. They own the German Shepherds. They own Great Danes. They own Shiba Inus. They own Potcakes. They own dogs that you might not ever want to deal with. Here in Denver, as far as training goes and clients go, as far as educating themselves, I think it's awesome. I do have good relationships with quite a few trainers that will absolutely refuse to work with any of the banned breeds in Denver. I will work with those dogs, and they know that I will, so they call me. And that's helpful for the owners of those dogs because they're trying to do the right thing and make sure that their dogs have training. They want to go through canine good citizen training, which I applaud them for. But if there's, you know, if you take that 230 trainers, which is already just a handful of trainers in Denver, and then you turn it down to there's maybe 30 of us in the metro area that will work with the banned breeds and work with them properly, that's phenomenal because Denver actually does have a lot of people that own these banned breeds. And I think that if you're looking into becoming a dog trainer, great, but get educated about it. Don't just think that you need to pick up a leash and have some Vistaprint business cards made up and whiten your smile and go knocking on people's doors, as Robert used to tell his students. It doesn't quite work that way. You're going to put yourself in harm's way. You're going to put that person's dog in harm's way and possibly their children or their family members. So you need to take it seriously.
So do you think that these shows are enhancing or impeding people that are interested in becoming a dog trainer as a career?
I think both. I think that they enhance people's interest in a new career, and I think that it also gives them a falsehood about the career. Dog training is not easy. It's not for every person. You know, it's not just about training the dog. Like we always tell people, there's three types of dog trainers. There's those trainers that can train dogs. There's those trainers that can train people. And then there's the rare trainers that can train both the dog and the person. And you know, if you're only able to train a dog and you can't talk to the person and can't teach the person, then you have no business being a dog trainer. You should be someone in a kennel working with board and trains and things like that, or training your own dogs for your own pleasure. If you're someone that can only teach people and you don't want to have to deal with the dogs, then you need to look into some sort of other career that has to do with maybe seminars and pet expos and things like that with dogs involved, but the main focus is on the people. A real dog trainer needs to know how to do both. It's public speaking and public performing all rolled up into one, and if you can't do that, then this is not the career for you. Dog training is not easy. As I've said, you know, there's a lot more that goes into it than doing the training. There's marketing involved. There's, you know, research that goes into it. There's continuing education. Unfortunately, and I disagree with this, there is no regulatory board out there in any country in this world that says that dog trainers should abide by this, and this criteria to make sure that everyone is getting the same type of training and the same type of, you know, curriculum. And that's sad to me because I think that it would better the industry.
Tom?
I definitely agree with that. But I do think that anybody that's going to give a seminar on dog training, and especially, you know, like you say, aggression issues are the ones that people are real interested in and want to know about, because, as you know, it's like twisting people's arms sometimes to train their dog. They wait till there's a problem, and you know, nobody wants to deal with these problems. We'd rather avoid them and train them when they're young and prevent them, you know. But anyone giving seminars, I think they need a little bit of knowledge on aggressive issues. And, you know, a lot of people who are involved in sport training, where we train police dogs and things like that, there's all different types of aggression that you have to learn about as well. And so I don't think that even they would give good advice. So I think, you know, as you say, Michelle, you have to do both. I mean, sure, there's a lot of people who are not people. You're not a people person. You can work in a kennel, and you can
probably train the dogs excellently and have a great rapport with the dogs, and dogs love you more than the owners. But you do have to, you know, transfer that training. Somebody has to transfer the training over to the owner. They have to, you know, you can spend $20,000 on a trained dog and still not know how to use it.
and waste your money, unless you take at least 3 or 4 hours of
handling instruction. So it's very important to know both. And, you know, a lot of times people have come to me and they want me to teach them how to be a dog trainer. And the first question I ask them is, what type of training did you do with your dog? Did you go to a group class? Did you have one come to your home? Did you do inboard training? No, I didn't do any of those. But they want to be a dog trainer. I just don't understand it. And then a lot of times I'll get people who call me, they want a job, you know, dog training assistant. So I'll tell them, okay, well, what kind of dog do you own? What kind of dog am I going to teach you how to train first? They don't even have a dog. So I think these kind of things are also important. I don't know. How do you feel about that?
Well, you know, that's a good point there, Tom. But, you know, what I come back to is, what if the person is very interested in a career, but they don't have any experience? They're 100% green. I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing. You know, and the way I look at it, if a person is green, they may be easier to train or easier to work with than somebody that comes in with 5-10 years of experience, but doing it the wrong way.
Well, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, it's hard to break bad habits or to teach an old dog new tricks when it comes to trainers and their methods. You're right about that. But yeah, green, my idea of teaching somebody how to train a dog or to become a dog trainer is, number one, they have to train their own. They have to or adopt one out of the dog pound, practice on that one. If you make a couple mistakes, it's no real big deal. I mean, the dog is sitting in a dog pound in the kennel. Nobody's doing anything with it. So, yeah, you got to, you know, before you go and train strangers' dogs and try to, you know, address issues, make sure when you get a dog and you want to become a dog trainer, don't create your own issues the same way that the people are, and then read these books on how to fix it, because you got to fix yourself and you got to get your dog trained. So I think to be a dog trainer, not only should you train your own dog, but why not go title it and get some high scores? And then after you've worked for somebody and trained the first 50 to 100 dogs, which is what I did, I worked for 3 different dog training schools before I went on my own. After 100 dogs were under my belt, then I'm not so surprised at all these other problems that may come up, because, you know, even now something might surprise you. You know, there's so many dogs out there. So, yeah, so it's the key is there has to be more than just an interest. There has to be a good rapport with the dogs, a connection. And you have to have your own dog to demonstrate to people either way when you become a dog trainer.
You know, in my courses, when I taught people how to become dog trainers, pretty much my mantra was preach it before you teach it, meaning that you have to have those titles before you can go out and teach whatever the course is. So if you're interested in doing tracking training or protection training or agility training or whatever that you're trying to do, and you've never had that experience and haven't titled the dogs, as Tom said, there's no way in the world that you can preach that or try to teach that if you don't have any experience in doing that. So I'm fully behind you on that one. So, guys, we have about 7 minutes left, and my last question to both of you guys, and let's keep this brief if we can, is, you know, both of you guys have said that, you know, why wait? You know, we always see the people that are coming in a year, year and a half, 2 years later, and all of a sudden, you know, our question to them is, why in the world did you wait so long? You know, that's part of human nature. People wait until something occurs. You know, people don't go to the doctor until it becomes serious. And I think that that's a pretty good analogy with when it becomes dog training. People don't call us up until they bite, they bite the neighbor, or they tear up the Natuzzi leather couch, or you know, do something that is taking it to the next level, and they feel out of control. So, what do you think about that, Michelle?
As far as people waiting until they have a problem,
right?
Or how they approach dog training altogether?
Their approach is, you know, they're coming at it after the fact. And I know both you and Tom had mentioned that can become an issue. So how do you reason with the folks about that?
Well, you know, in my experience, I've been doing dog training off and on for 20 years, professionally as a business owner for only 8 years. And in that 8 years, I've had about, 2% of my clientele contact me prior to even buying a puppy. But that's also because I list myself as a referralist for breeders. And I've had clients call me up and sign up for training, and we go and pick out their dog, and all of these things occur before one even mistake has even been thought about to occur. And I've had more success with those clients and those dogs than anyone else. So I always try to recommend to people to do it that way, especially at Christmas time. You know, I say, hey, it's great you want to get little Johnny and Susie a puppy for Christmas, but why don't you start by sitting down with a dog trainer first, have them meet the veterinarian, find out what it's going to take for the care of this dog, for the training of this dog, because dogs are in school too. They have learning critical periods of life that if they're not addressed properly and at the right time, then you're setting that dog up for failure, you know, such as when you have an eight-week-old puppy, you don't necessarily want to teach that eight-week-old puppy how to scale a four-foot fence because, number one, he physically can't do it, but number two, my point on that is that he mentally can't do it. So there's certain stages of training that all dogs should go through at the right time period. You know, you're not going to put your five-year-old in sixth grade. You're going to put them in kindergarten. There's a reason for that, and dogs need to have those same type of learning structures themselves, and that's how I look at it. That's how I try to address it with people. You know, if you're calling me because I'm the last trainer in the phone book that's even wanting to give you time to talk to you and to help you through something, then great. At least you finally got through to someone that's going to help you. If your dog is 6 years old and... I mean, I can just tell you a story this morning. This morning, Diesel's owner called me, and Diesel is a Burmese Mountain Dog mix that I trained 2 years ago. And she called me to say, hey, he's acting weird. He won't leave my side. He's blocking me from going places. He just wants me to sit still. Is he telling me something? And she said, people are going to think I'm crazy, but I think he's trying to tell me something. Today is my birthday, and he's really acting strangely. And you know, I let her talk to me about that, and I walked her through it, and I said, you know what? He is being silly. He just wants to be with you. But let's not ignore maybe some of the signals and signs that he's trying to tell us. And she's going, you know, she does continuing training with him, and he's a good dog. But this was a behavior that she recognized in him immediately because of the training that she had been through. It was not necessarily abnormal, but not his regular personality. So she called me. I want people to feel comfortable in calling any trainer and ask them, hey, my dog's kind of acting weird today. Is this something I should be concerned about? Is it a behavior? Is it a medical issue? Or is he just being silly?
So, Tom, we have about 2 minutes left, but if you don't mind, we'll just run over. It won't air live any longer, but it won't be streaming, but it'll still air on the show, so when people listen later as a download. Tom, what is your response to people waiting for a period of time, and then they come to you and they say, okay, it's whatever's happened, I need to address this now?
That's the problem. That's the problem. See, It would be like kind of like thinking of it this way. I mean, if you have children, okay, you take them to a school to educate them, but in this case, you're actually educating two clients: the dog and the dog owner, the human. So it should be looked at as education. It shouldn't just be looked at as a quick fix for everybody's dog problems. I think if that could be presented on these TV dog shows, I think we would have things like a legitimate licensing bureau where you have to become a licensed trainer to be able to train somebody's dog, you know, before people or governments or cities decide to ban a certain breed. You know, to me, it makes more sense to have mandatory training as the first step before you go ahead and do something crazy like ban these pit bulls. And as you say, a lot of people, especially government workers that work for animal control, they can't tell the difference between a pit bull and an English bull terrier even. I mean, they had license plate. I love my, pit bull terrier with a picture of an English bull terrier on it. So people, you know, they have no clue even what the breed looks like, and they ban them. And then the next one will be God knows what breed, a chow maybe, or who knows. So I think, Like we all know there's a recession going on right now. The only companies that are really doing well are dog daycare centers. is it 100% necessary? Maybe not, you know, for a lot of people. But training is 100% necessary for every single dog. Not every problem dog, every single dog. So I think that's what they should be telling people is, you know, even if they're showing their techniques on a TV show, tell people, go in your area and find a dog training school. And if it's some kind of a big conglomerate that has, you know, like so many different branches all over the world and claims that collectively they train a million dogs, if they put you on your hands and knees and tell you to yell bah at a big, you know, nervous Great Dane, and then they tell you to practice that all week long, if you notice it's not working in the first day, quit. Find a legitimate professional dog trainer, you know, and it can't be any simpler than that. Dog training, actually, it should be made as simple as possible, but not rushed, and not illusion people that it's going to take overnight, no matter how good of a trainer you are.
And that's a great point. It does take time and effort, but, you know, it's a very simple process if you know the process itself. So my last point in moderating this, Michelle, is just to kind of put you on the spot. What is your opinion, good, bad, or indifferent, about these TV trainers?
My overall opinion about all of the TV trainers, really, I know all of our listeners out there, it sounds like Tom and I are not on the same page, but I really feel that we are. I feel that they are good and bad for the industry. It's like he just said, if they would say at the end, like they do on the X Games, don't try this at home, if they would say on the program, contact a trainer in your area, and then even maybe contact us trainers in the area where these shows are being aired, and ask us for our information and do a little bleep for us, that would be great, because, you know, they're enhancing their industry, but we're part of the industry, and you and I, Robert, know full and well, we do cross-business promotion all the time on our radio show. We have quite a few dog trainers who have come on. We have quite a few dog trainers that refuse to come on because they think that they will lose clients to Denver Dog Works, and I say hogwash. Not every trainer is right for every person or every dog. There is enough of us out there that you can give us all a try. The whole point that Tom and I both are trying to make is that when you get a dog, the training starts the moment you put the leash on the dog. So
right.
I think that the shows are indifferent. I mean, they're good and they're bad, but people need to watch them with a grain of salt.
Tom, what's your opinion? Good, bad, or indifferent? You know, that was the topic of the show. That's why you contacted us to be on this show. What's your overall opinion here?
Well, I would say at the present moment it's bad, but I think that no matter what techniques people are using, you know, the key is to point out to them that there's something out there called basic obedience training. And I wish that people like Caesar would show simple routines, heel, sit, stay, down, and come, and then maybe, you know, take him where there's a dog and there's an issue that he needs to fix and try and correct it. It needs to be out there. People need to know, you know, forget about this 1 hour stuff, this 1 week stuff. And then I think it would be beneficial. At the present moment, I don't think it is. That's my opinion. Everybody's got their right, they're entitled to an opinion. So I think it's got a lot of work.
So with that, if you don't mind, Tom, you had mentioned earlier with the show that you guys had up there in Canada, you know, that showed kind of the basic obedience stuff, you know, and it is. It's very boring to watch a group class of you know, doing 10-minute sits and 5-minute downs and all these things. And, you know, it's very boring television. Do you think, Tom, that, that people would even care to watch anything like that?
Well, you'd have to get a bunch of professionals in the movie business, in the film business, to put their heads together and figure out a way. I mean, I think what impresses my customers the most, and I do all the different ways. I shouldn't say that. I used to do group classes in the past. I don't do too many of them. I do, however, do group classes where I start off with private. And then when I feel the dog is about 70% or 80% trained, then I may put them in a group, you know. But I do them all. I do house calls. I do classes. I keep just a few dogs at my home and do inboard. And I think where people are the most impressed is when they could not walk their dog close to other dogs, or you know, they were just so dog aggressive that they were embarrassed to take them out of the door. And when I finished a dog in 4 weeks, 5 weeks, or 6 weeks, or however long it took me, I think people are totally amazed when they see me have the dog doing all of these commands with a completely loose leash, no adrenaline, the hair is not even standing up, the dog's not even interested in the other dogs, and he looks happy doing the training. And I'm out there with 50 dogs in the room. That's right. Where people get impressed and amazed. And I think if they were to show that on TV, I think we'd have a winner. But how do you carry that show on for a whole season? That's
right.
Where the professionals need to come in, whether they got to put a little box screen on the left and show obedience routines while you're in their house, showing them how to give a leash correction when he tries to bite your hand, you know, when you're picking something up or something. It's not cool. It's not mad. It's insane to get bit, in my
right.
opinion. You know? So I think that's for the job for the film people.
So we're talking to Tom Relic. He is the owner of Academy 4 Dogs International based in Toronto, Canada. Tom, it's been a pleasure. Can you tell us some websites? Are you on Facebook, Twitter? Tell us about how people can get in contact with you.
Pretty much all of those things, Facebook, Twitter, Academy 4 Dogs. And my website here is dogtrainingtoronto.net. Dogtrainingtoronto.net is the website. And yeah, I appreciate the plug because, as I said, I was in Florida for many years, and most of my neighborhood lost their homes and have vacated the whole town. It's all bankrupt right now. So I am kind of starting over up here in Toronto. So, you know, before I would even take on a new customer, I would show them a dog that's already trained. They see exactly what they're going to get at the end product, and I always produce it.
There you go. So Tom Relic, Academy 4 Dogs. Is the company, and you can find him on Facebook, Twitter, and just about everywhere else. I know he and I are following each other on all of those social media. Tom, it's been a pleasure. We'll keep in touch, okay?
My pleasure also.
Thank you very much. So on behalf
Thank
of
you.
Our guest Tom Relic and our co-host Michelle Forteau, this is Robert Forteau. We'll see you guys next time. Never forget your dreams. Goodbye.